Today's daf from Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Dalet, and we're still a bit behind over here in the Melachos, and we're on Ayin Gimel Amud Beit, and I believe that we got up to the two dots, about in the middle of the daf. Am I right? That we to the Kiddush that we talked about before? No, we did further than that. Excellent. Whew, that's good. We got up to Omer Rebbe Abba. So Omer Rebbe Abba was in the middle of the sugya of Achofer Guma. Okay, I don't mind starting with the two dots again. Let's do the two dots again quickly. Tana Achoresh, Achofer, Achoreitz, Kula Melocha Achasein. So however it is that you soften that dirt, you make a hole, you dig it, you plow it, it's all the same Melocha. Omer Fshesh Taitalo Gav Shushit V'datla. If you smooth out the floor by taking off a mound in a house, you're Chai Mishum Bona. In a Sada Yerchaya Mishum Choresh, and Rava points out that contrary to your assumptions, if you had a hole and you filled it up, you would be Chayav Mishum Bona in the house, you would be Chayav Mishum Choresh, even though what you're doing is adding dirt instead of digging dirt. So Choresh does not mean in any way that you have to be digging necessarily. So what we're talking about here is preparing the ground for sowing. And that would be, even if you filled it up with a soft dirt, that would be usable for sowing. Okay, that brought us up to the sugya where we were going to discuss the question of Malachashay Tzricha Lagufa in the case of Harisha. Amar Rebaba, HaChofer Guma B'Shabbat Ve'eno Tzarich Ela Lofra Potter Alel. Suppose you dig a hole, and the reason that you're digging the hole is because you need dirt to sprinkle over something dirty on your floor. In that case, you would not be chayev, because that is not the act of harisha, and this would be true. Even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that a malacha she'inat tzricha legufa you're chayev on, and this l'chor is a classic example of a malacha she'inat tzricha legufa, because you're doing the act of digging, and you're doing it for completely the wrong purpose. I mean, you're not interested in having the impact on the ground, but you're doing the act, are you not? And is that not Rabbi Yehuda's general sheet of Malach Shein Etzich Laguf for that nonetheless you'd be Chayim? Says the Gemara, no, because, and here comes another concept, and that is the concept called Mikalkel. So please put that down, because here it's a technical term. The idea of Mikalkel is that one of the other requirements for Malach, even if you hold a Malach Shein Etzich Laguf, what it is that you're doing has to be something that is positive. It's constructive, not deconstructive. So whether you're digging a hole in your floor because you need dirt, or you're digging a hole in a field because you need dirt, it is not serving any constructive purpose. On the contrary, it's basically making a hole that then you're going to have to smooth out at some later time. That's called mikalkel. And a mikalkel is a more fundamental lack in the concept of malacha than the question of whether it's being done for the particular kind of purpose for which it was designed in the Mishkan, the way Tosfos is learning, or for a particular positive purpose. Over here, it's essence that is negative. And therefore, even Alibi the Rabbi Yehuda, it suffers from another problem. So we not only have an issue of mitasek, and we not only have an issue of eno mitkaven, and we not have an issue only of malacha shein tzricha legufa in the determination of the nature of a malacha, but we also have a fundamental requirement of mitaken as opposed to mikalkel. This would be an excellent example. Then let's go into the various me'ein ha-malachot of the next malacha down in our Mishnah, which is kotser. Now note that the word kotser, again, in Hebrew, has a very specific meaning, because when it comes to Hebrew, every different species has a different word for the time of its harvesting and for what is done in order to harvest it. So therefore, whether you're talking about the malacha in terms of kotser, which we've been doing because we're dealing with grain and the making of bread, as we're going to see later, but the same thing would be exactly true whether you want to do a ketsira or a bitsira, or a gedira. So it doesn't matter whether you're dealing with the wheat, with the gedira, you're dealing with the grapes, or you're dealing with dates, which would be called goder, or you're dealing with olives, which would be called mosaic, or you're dealing with figs, which we called ore. Each one of these things is the same malacha. It's not, it's just a different word because it's done to different things. We saw this concept before of what is called a me'ein ha-melacha. Kulam melacha achatein, they're just alternative names for different objects to which precisely the same melacha is done to, and that's not the same thing as a tolda, as will become gradually clearer to us. Omrev papa ha'iman deshada pisa ledikla va'ater tamrei chayev shtayim. Somebody that throws a clod of dirt onto a branch of a palm tree, and because of it, some dates fall off. You would be chayev, this is another example, of doing two separate melachas with one single activity. We spoke about before, if you would be cutting aspasta and thereby encouraging the regrowth of the aspasta, so then you would be doing the zoreya and the ketzira simultaneously with the same action. We had other examples of that. Here's another example. In this case, you would be causing the dates to come off of the tree, which would be a type of ketzira, although, of course, when we're talking about dates, we wouldn't be talking about ketzira. We would be talking about the goder, but it would be the same melacha. But you're also chayev, achas mishum tolesh. The general idea of tolesh is any type of ketzira, or being tolesh kol davar migidulo. This is the overall word that we use for this melacha. And one of them would be mishum mifarek. Now, the question of exactly what mifarek means is a very fascinating and complex one. And it's a big machlokus in many places in the Masechet. Rashi understands that the word mifarek would be wherever you would disconnect something from the way in which it grows, in the way that you would be doing by threshing wheat. So by threshing wheat, what do? We basically have a connection between the kernel of the wheat itself and a chaff which is connected to it. When we thresh it and bang on it, we loosen that connection, and then it falls apart, and then we winnow it in order to separate that out. In this case as well, if you take a look at the way that a date grows on a cluster, so what you've got over there is a connection of the date top to the little piece that goes over it in the cluster of dates, which is a very solid thing, a cluster of dates. And therefore, according to Rashi, this is a type of disha. But Tosva says it's not what we're talking about at all. It's not similar because it doesn't really contain it. It's just attached to it. And what we mean over here by mifarek is where you're taking two things apart in the way that, you know, you've got that little plastic-like cellulose coating of a date. When the date starts to dry, it actually separates out. When you throw this at it, you not only pull it off of the tree, but you also break that off. So according to Tosva, that's what we're talking about in terms of a mifarek. Now, we'll see the differences later on between the various types of ways in which we do similar types of malachas and nonetheless call them separately. So we'll talk about this quite soon. The next malacha is me'amer. Me'amer means you gather something together. So what would be the din, says Rava, if a guy wants to gather salt and he goes to a salt pan? So I'm on the kind of milcha, mimilchata, chayev mishum ma'amer. But what you do over there is you let the water in, you let it evaporate, and then you've got a lot of salt that's deposited on the bottom of the ditch, and you gather it together, and you now have salt. So isn't that the same as being ma'amer in tfu'ah? Abaye says that, by definition, you can't have imur on things other than the things that are similar to the growth. We're talking about things that grow, not things that happen to be on the ground, because they evaporated out on the ground. And therefore, ein imur, ela begidulei karka, we do not apply this din of imur, which is not how we paskin. We actually paskin like Rava, as usual. And what's more, people in general are not aware of the implications of that psak. Because, I mean, according to that, it ought to be a problem where, let's say, your kids drop a box full of those little things that they used to make toy necklaces with and things like that, all these little tiny pieces that go scattering over all over the floor, or if you spill a whole container of apples over the floor and so on and so forth. I mean, at some point, according to Rava, it would be called imur. Now, the question whether there is a fundamental difference between the act of Imur versus the act of cleaning things up, now that's certainly a big possibility. Because remember, we talked about yesterday, according to Tosfos, that Tosfos explained, even if you hold like Rabbi Yehuda, Melacha Sheina Tzricha L'Gufa, but nonetheless, the act that you're doing, if you don't have any interest in the questions of getting something out to be called Katsira, the fact that you happen to be being Kotzer while you're sitting around pruning a tree is irrelevant. It's not considered to be Melacha Sheina Tzricha L'Gufa. The same thing would be true when you're doing an act of cleaning up with a broom as opposed to an act of gathering, where I have no interest in gathering, I just have an interest in cleaning. So there, too, that may be a big difference. In general, we're going to see later on in today's daf, we're going to see that a concept of, let's say, a choshev concept, it's like eating. My intent is to eat. Many of the malachas that are done as a separate malacha in order to prepare food ultimately for eating, are not called that malacha when they are done in the context of the actual eating, which we'll talk about. And therefore, that what would otherwise be called some type of achana for food and be osir as an act of eating, a type of actual eating, would not be osir. One of the most common of them would be perhaps making a salad, chopping up a salad. If you chop up a salad, we're going to get into the problem of tchina in a moment. Why wouldn't that be tochin? Or being borer, where you need to separate out one type of food from another in order to be able to eat it as you're eating it, that's not considered to be borer, even though had you done exactly the same thing in order to store it, which is called lootzer, it would definitely be borer. So you see that it's also the context that would define it. The next case that we had was the case of dash. Now, dash is, as we said a moment ago, because according to Rashi, we were talking about dash in terms of separating out the date from the date cluster. So the classic dash is actual threshing of wheat. But there are other things that are precisely the same idea. So let's say somebody has flax, is growing flax. I mean, in order to get flax to be usable, you have to beat on it in order to separate out the pod material from the material of the flax that you're going to be using in order to make threads. That would be called minapetz. So it's a type of banging on it. The same thing would be true about cotton, where you need to separate out the cotton seeds, but that's not done by banging in that way. That's done by twisting it with a bow kind of affair. That's called minapet. But that's also different words for the same melacha that is being done to different materials. And therefore, in exactly the same way that we spoke about zri'ah being the same exact melacha as niti'ah, except it's being done to different items. So zri'ah is done to seeds. Nitiya is done to saplings. That doesn't make an av tolda relationship. It's just another format. Me'ena malacha. So too over here, these are all one malacha, not aves and toldas. But then we got into something really strange. And that was the next four malachas, which are malachas 6 through 9, would be zore. So that was after you do the threshing, you have to do the winnowing by throwing it up into the air, and then the wind separates out the grain from the chaff. And then borer, which afterwards you do on the actual things in front of you, you look at it with your hand and you use something to take out any of the junk from it, like little stones, dirt that got mixed with it. Tochen, grinding, and mirakeit. Now, mirakeit is sifting the flour after it's been ground in order to get a standard size granule for your flour and to get rid of the thick pieces, which, or any remaining dirt, or any remaining pieces of the chaff, those kind of things you want to get rid of. Now, the question is, there does not seem to be a significant difference between zoreh, borer, and mirakeit. Because, again, remember that when we're dealing with the malachas, all of these malachas have some type of fundamental conceptualization, correct? Now, the more fundamental we get, the less we're able to distinguish between malachas. Isn't that true? In other words, if we would take a look at all of the malachas that are there, and they have to do with the preparation of food. I mean, if we would like to, we could go all the way down and say all those types of activities that are necessary to make something that grows in the ground useful for eating are a malacha. But we don't do that. And instead, what we do is we look at an upper level description instead of a lower level description. So on every malacha, we're going to have to agonize over what particular level of description are we talking about. If we want to talk about the conceptual concept that lies between Zora, Borer, and Merakeid, it would strike you that the most basic way of describing that would be separating usable from unusable material. But then they would all be precisely the same. Even though they may be done slightly differently, we don't usually look at the definition of malacha on that type of upper level. So why do we do that here? So Abayev Rav Adaimer Tavayu, look, I mean, basically, the issue over here is that since these are all done, not simply that we're taking things that are edible and we're separating out the inedible things, but the thing is that even though there are different times that we do this and there are different points in the process, they're mechayev each one because of the fact that this was something that was done in the Mishkan in that particular way. So then, afal gav de ika de damyala choshivla. Even though they're done and they end up achieving the same thing, but they're done at different stages of the preparation. And because of that, they can really be seen in different ways. Because one of them starts with the actual creation of the food. So let's say you're talking about before you even have a piece of wheat, what you've got is something that doesn't look like a piece of wheat at all. It has this husk over it, and the wheat has not yet appeared. So that would be your first act, would be the disha, and that allows the wheat to get there. Then when you're going to go on and do the next stages, we're over there, you're processing something which is already food by taking off that which is useless, or that which is the whatever, I shouldn't say useless, because we're going to have soon a actual definition of what we mean by psolet. But taking the thing that you don't want out from the thing that you do want is very different on that level of description than getting the thing to be there in the first place. And then after I process it, remember that the next stage is only possible to be done after I do the tchina. So then that means I already have a completely different format of what I now have, the actual food, and now I'm going to be processing that. That is considered to be a different malacha because of the fact that since in the Mishkan it was done so separately, that forces us to look at it from a point of view of a higher order explanation of what we mean by the malacha. Asks the Gemara, but is that really true? I mean, why don't we talk about, let's say, pounding something, right? So when we built the Mishkan, I mean, one way of separating things out would be by putting something in, especially in the Mishkan, where they weren't growing bread, they were growing dye stuffs, right, or herbs of different kind. Now, those things, we wouldn't do a typical threshing by pulling over a threshing board with an animal or letting the animal step over it, anything like that. We'd put it in a mortar and a pestle, and we would sit there in order to give it that first breakup between the useful pieces to allow the actual spice or dye to appear for us. So why don't we do that? Because you can do that with grain as well. Because, look, it's all very nice to talk about the disha, but the disha only deals with the husk, which is on the outside. When you do ketisha, you're able to separate out bran from the wheat, and that gives you what people think is a higher quality bread because it's whiter and it's not whole wheat. So you want to distinguish between the whole wheat, and that's different from having the actual husk on it, which some people actually are careful to use, in which it's unprocessed wheat or germinated wheat. That's yet a lower level of bread in terms of the Gemara. It's what we would call more of a health bread. But over here also, why don't we talk about the Ketisha, which is a finer act of Disha? Omer Abaye, Shekein Ani, Ochel Pito Belo Ketisha. All those poor people who can't afford nice white bread, they have to eat that horrible whole wheat stuff. So they're too poor to afford good bread. And because of that, they might even eat the kind of wrong alpha omega fats that Barnea did not put a heksher on. They're too poor to afford it. So the same idea would be true over here. And since, therefore, it's not a given and a requirement of being able to make bread that way, so we don't include it, okay? Says Rava, this is not good enough for me. Because, I mean, it seems to me still to be arbitrary to sort of define at what point you're going to be describing a malacha that makes it differently. Just because you could do that, why should I do that? What makes me say that because in the Mishkan, it was done that way at separate stages, that we should view each stage as a different malacha when it's just a more sophisticated or subtle way of getting done what it is that we were doing in the first place? Rav is coming to address once again why we consider three similar things to be exactly the same. It doesn't make sense to him. I say that this is going according to Rebbe. And remember that Rebbe, we darshaned back earlier, Memtes, we darshaned the idea of Eile HaDvarim, Ve'Eile HaDvarim. So we spoke about the way in which we added up the Devarim, HaDvarim, and we said we've got the Eile being the additional gematria that gives us all the 39 malachas, Eile 36, Devarim 37 and 38, because it's plural, and Hadvarim 39. Now, if it's going according to Rebbe, then we would have to ignore the Kotesh because we have no choice. Because if we added Kotesh, we would have Arbaim. We would have actually 40 separate malachas. Now, let's just think about that for a moment. Because Tosfos utilized earlier on Memtes, utilize the explanation that we had. Remember, the Gemara asked a funny question. Hani avot melachot keneged ma? What are they keneged? What does that mean? Says Tosfos. What in the world does keneged mean? There are 39 melachas. What we're not looking at deciding the 18 brachas of Shmona Esrei being keneged, whatever types of avodas or remozim and the psukim. I mean, here we're talking about something. Either it was done in the Mishkan or not. I mean, is he suggesting that we just take a number, then we figured it out on our own? That given that there's Eile HaDvarim, let's figure out the 39 prime things that you could do in the world. That's very difficult to believe, says Tosfos. And that therefore everybody, of course, agrees to the drasha, that Moshe Rabbeinu's presentation of the Malachas of Shabbos together in conjunction with the Binyan of the Mishkan means that the Mishkan remains our model for Maisa Bereishis and for, therefore, the determination of Malachas. And therefore, Tosfos says they must be complementary, this deal of Rebbe in darshaning the Eile HaDvarim and the obvious fact that we always are looking to the Mishkan. And so, what the question of what Rava seems to be saying over here, and I must tell you that Tosfos leaves this hanging himself back there, and he says, look, for some reason the Gemara considers this to be machlokas, as he shows from various places, but it can't be a complete machlokas. So the question of what is the primary concern that we have, do we look really to try to make a model that's a perfect model that would be reflective of every different change in the Mishkan? So a change at the timing of the process and where it fits into the overall things would be sufficient. Or do we take our cue from the fact that the Torah has first announced there's 39 malachas, gentlemen. Now you go ahead, look at the Mishkan, and you fit it in to the Mishkan. Now, in order for me to be able to keep, by the way, this would be very similar, you'll notice, to one of the most incredible works in all of human history of determining structure and sets, and that's the Sefer of the Mitzvahs of the Rambam. The Rambam does the same thing by saying, look, if the Torah is Merames, and it's Merames in exactly the same way, with the Gematrias of the word Torah, so on and so forth, that there are Taryag Mitzvahs. So the Rambam takes for granted that given the number, The only reason that it's important for us to have that number is to do enough experiments to find out what the determining factors would be when, if applied, they would yield 613 mitzvahs. Because the way everyone was doing it up until his time, as the Rambam points out there in his introduction, is insane. Because you haven't defined what a mitzvah is. So anything that seems like a nice thing to do is a mitzvah. 10 million things could be nice things to do. What are the categories? What are the real definitions? That can only be done if I apply a given number to what appears to be an extremely large pool of things and seeing which categories emerge by applying the number. So that, Tosfos says, is basically the same idea over here. We're applying a given number to a much larger category, and now we're trying to see how it would emerge. So now we're stuck on the question of kotesh. Shall we view kotesh? Because remember, again, in the Mishkan, what were we doing? We weren't baking bread. We were dealing with things that required ketisha. You didn't thresh your different spices. You were kotesh the spices. So then the question is, ketisha, if we're going to apply ketisha to the melechas hapat, it would be applicable, but it would be a more subtle type of melacha. So what do we do? Says Rava, I don't think your answer is sufficient, Abaye, because you need to apply Rebbe's first, his number, in order to get that criterion. And you can't say because an oni would eat his pot in that way, we're not going to count it. How would you know not to count that? Ask the Gemara, but wait a minute. If all we're talking about over here is yielding the same number of malachas, so then why wouldn't we have take out one of the other ones, because you've got three, and do this instead? In other words, you've got three malachas that are the same, that essentially achieve a level of cleaning out or separating out something that you don't want from something that you do want. And then if you added kotesh, you would be adding two different types of malachas that cause the initial breakdown between things that are connected. Namely, you would have disha and ketisha. And then on the other hand, you would have the selection things, two selection things and two breaking down things. Instead of having three selections things and one breaking down things, which is the disha. I mean, doesn't that make more sense? It would certainly be more balanced. So then if we took out one of the three and we inserted ketisha, if all we're trying to do is apply the number, then we should come out with the same number by doing that, Rava. Elamachvarta kedabaye. We're going to need a bias definition in order to explain why we will not count ketisha because it's less universal. Tana Rabbana. Now, we have two girsaot here, and those two girsaot are important in understanding the sugya. The Rashi's girsa, v'ayulafanav minei ochalin, and Rashi goes out of his way to say, do not read shnei minei ochalin here. So, that would mean, if you have kinds of foods that are mixed with junk, that's what it means to Rashi. In Tosfos, who does specifically have the girsa of shnei minei ochalin, then it means that you do not have any junk. You have two different things, one of which you want to eat right now and one of which you don't want to eat right now, which is a very significant expansion of the concept of borer, of psolet from ochel. If you're talking about psolet being not something that is in any way anything's wrong with it, it's just not what I want right now. So if I've got some rice that's mixed with hummus grains, right, and I want, depends what my mood is. Do I want to eat rice or do I want to eat hummus? If I want the hummus, then that makes the rice the equivalent of the psolet in the mixture or vice versa. Tosfos says we could read the Gemara equally, the way Rashi would do, which we have actual junk, or we could be reading it as two different types of food, one of which is the psolet. So you're allowed to be borer of ochel. Now listen to this interest. This is a brighter, remember, so we're going to have to understand. You can be borer of ochel. You can be borer what you want and eat it. You could be borer of meniach. You could be borer what others may want and leave it for them. But you cannot be borer. What in the world that means? And if you did borer, you're chayev chatas. Now you must admit this is a very strange kind of formulation for the Braisa. So on the surface, the Braisa seems to be discussing three separate things. It's talking about the heter of Borer Lechatchila. It's talking about a certain case where lo yivror. And then it's talking about a third case where if you did Borer, you would actually be chayav achatas for doing so, not just osir. So you would have Mutar Lechatchila, Patur Aval Asur, and Chayav Chatat. What's this Braisa talking about? My comma. Omar Willow, what it's saying is like this. It's a function of what when you need it. So let's say you can be Borva Ochel Lechatchila if you intend to eat it today, not if you intend to store it. Because if you intend to eat it today, then it becomes part of eating. You can be Morer for other people and leave it as long as it'll be eaten today. But you cannot be Borer for later. And if you did, you're Bichayev Chatas, which means that I haven't explained that there are three different sections, only two. Matkeflor of Chista, I don't get it. Are you allowed? What do you mean? You're allowed to be Borer if you do it today. And I suppose you're allowed to turn on the TV if it's for today, or you're allowed to bake a cake if it's for today. I mean, I love this new heter. As long as it's for today, it's fine. What are you talking about? Now, obviously, what he was talking about was the concept, as Tosis points out, that we spoke of earlier, that if the act is being defined as something else, I am eating, I'm not borering, I'm sticking my hand at the thing of picking out what I want to eat and eating it. That's not called borer. Borer is the preparation of something to be itself, not part of the act of achila. However, Rav Chista did not like that. And he said, I don't understand how you can insert bo bayom, as if that's an issue, into the braita. Could you cook today? Could you bake today? That doesn't make any sense. Therefore, says Rav Chista, what it means is you can be borer little amounts at a time. So you can be borer of ochel less than the shiur of a grogeret. And you can be borer minya for other people, less than a shear of a grogeret. But do not do the brira of the shear of a grogeret, because if you did, you'd be chayav achatas. To which Rav Yosef says the obvious thing, oh, really? You mean, so now you're allowed to bake a cake less than a grogeret? That was also good. I mean, you have the same problem that you were screaming about. You're doing the same thing. Ella Amar Rav Yosef, the point over here is you can be borer and eat if you're doing it with your hand. That is not an act of Isser Borer. You could be Borer Menier B'yad. You cannot use a kanon or a tamchui. And if you did, you'd only be Osir, you wouldn't be Chayev. And if you used an actual Nafa Uchvara, then you would be Chayev Chatas. Now, I say the Braita is making it very clear there are three different stages of Chiyav over here. One of them, which is Mutter, which is not doing anything using a type of instrument. And then that just becomes part of the way in which you're fingering the food. That you can do. But you cannot use something improvised to do Breira, such as take a big plate, put the grains on the plate, shake the plate up at an angle, and that way some things fall to one side, some things remain on the other side. We've all done this kind of thing for rice and dirt and things like that. That is a type of borer. Or to use a kanon would be to use a tube that gets thinner as it goes down, and then it only allows things to roll out of it, like the coin selectors that they used to have in buses, things like that. That is sort of improvised. So you're not allowed to use an instrument, but an improvised instrument is not the deraisa. But if you used a actual sieve, then you would be chayav achatas, because that is the fundamental way to do brera. There, we explain everything, says Rabbi Yosef. Now you've got three different dinner. Matkiflor of Amnon, excuse me, but I don't see anything about that here. Midi kanon v'tam chui katani? I mean, don't you think that if the whole point over here is that you're trying to make a distinction between hand and various types of kelim, of tools, don't you have to make the distinction right in the beginning? But if you're using a tool, you don't say a word about that. That can't be. You can't bring in something from nowhere. I'll tell you what I think it means. It's a question of how you're doing it, not with what you're doing it. So if you're taking out the food from the thing that you don't want, that you can do, because normally, what is borer? You look through the thing, you find the dirt, you throw the dirt out. Here's a stone, there's a stone, there's a piece of dirt, I throw it out. But if you take out the grains from the dirt, that's not the way you normally do brira. So therefore, that's eating. So you can take out the ochel from the pisolet, and you can take out to eat it, and you can take it out even not as eating it, but leave it for somebody else to eat now. You cannot, however, take pisolet mitocha ochel. And if you did that, im birer chayav chatat. Now, admittedly, I didn't manage to explain three different stages, but at least this holds together without needing to bring something else into the braita. Matkifla, why is this not bringing something else into the braita? Again, the main point of the braita, according to you, is missing. I mean, the same way you were complaining about, well, you didn't all of a sudden mention the transition into instrumentation. I'm saying the same thing to you. You didn't mention the main point. I mean, the main point is the question of the direction of ochel mitoch pesol, pesol mitoch ochel. How could you not even make any kind of reference to that? Ela amar Rabbi, I'll tell you what it means. It means borer v'ochel, meaning now, as part of the act of eating, stick your fingers in, put it into your mouth. That you can do. That's la'alter. Borero meniach la'alter. You could set it down on a plate for another guy to eat it directly, and even that is considered to be derech achila. Do not be borer for later on in the day, even if it's on the same day. Because if you did, im birer, that would be the equivalent of. And that's where we get this third. We're trying to bring out that there are three stages, even though there aren't three dinim. If you did, what would apparently be to you a middle stage between doing brera for eating as an act of eating, or doing brera for storage, which is long-term, you would have thought that doing brera for later that day would be usher, maybe, because it's similar. No, it's actually chayev chatas, because it's na'asak borer la'otzer. It becomes the same thing. And the Rabban had said this in front of Rava, this explanation, and Rava said, good boy, Nachmeni is right on target over there. Abaya's got it right. That is the way to explain things. And Richie's wondering about whether he's been Mechalal Shabbos all these years. I could see it in his eyes. What's that? Watermelons. That would be taking out the psolet from the ochel, right? So that would be a problem. Listen, I wanted to talk to you guys actually about this question. Basically, this is one of the most exciting dapim, because every time we define a av over here or a tolda, we immediately get into questions, and what about, and what about? Now, there's probably 10,000 and what abouts. And we obviously are going to get hopelessly behind if we do our what abouts. So on the other hand, not to do our what abouts is almost tragic when you're doing Masechet Shabbat, right? So I was wondering whether if you guys would be interested for us like to take a special time and have a what about time, which would give us an easier way to get to the bottom of these malachas, halacha lemaisa. So if you want to do that, I would love to do it too. So then we should start thinking about when, put up suggestions about when we would be a good time to do this. And between our conversations on the daf page, we'll work it out over the next day, Bezrat Hashem. So let's go further. Suppose you've got two different types of food in front of somebody, and he basically wants one of them. Now here, Rashi's got no problem. Rashi doesn't hold that there's no such thing as borrow one type of food from the other, but there, we weren't talking about using immediately. The food that I want to use immediately, if I don't want it, really is psolet, because I don't want this. Because right now, I really don't want it at all. The cases that we had before that we're dealing with maybe for the whole day or whatever, Rashi did not want to accept that at the early stage we were talking about one type of food from another, which is why he changed the, or he kept the gears that we have. So what if you do have a type of food in front of you? You chose one of them and you eat. You chose one of them and you left it over. Rav Ash for somebody else. Rav Ashi says you're potter. Rav Yirmiyah Midifti says you're chayev. Now, when Rav Ashi says you're potter, what about the Braita? The Braita says if you go ahead and you do brira, it says you're chayev achatas. So why does Rav Ashi say over here that you're potter? And if he is saying the way we came out with Abaye, that you're doing it for now, so then he should say it's mutter. But where does he come off saying you're not allowed to do this at all? I mean, either I don't get it. It's not a question of chayev or potter. I mean, it's a question of mutter or chayev, depending on how we would do it. So the question is, how does Rav Ashi learn the Braita? Answers the Gemara, lo kasha. Rav Ashi was talking about Bekanon Ubetamchui. The Braita was talking about Benafa Vechavora. And we already saw that there's a difference in that which is the normal way of doing it or that which is an improvised way of doing it. Ki Osir Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael and he said, you know what happened to me when I was in Eretz Yisrael? It was Rav Bivi's turn to serve as waiter for that Shabbos in the yeshiva. So when he brought dessert, he brought this whole, we were over there, Rav Asi, they were visiting, and they were very choshev. So Rav Bivi brought this giant basket of all kinds of different fruits in front of everybody. Now Rashi learns that these fruits were mixed with leaves. Other just learns it was a question of what the different fruits were. But what he did was, and this is very nogea l'halacha, what he did was he threw the whole thing down on the table, pow, and they went rolling all over the place. And that allowed everybody to pick out the fruit they wanted or to pick the fruit out from between the leaves that had been packaged together to hold the fruit softly, right? Okay, what happens when you've got, this actually happened to me just 3 weeks ago, and I used this Gemara, Halacha Lemaisa, as it's brought, Halacha Lemaisa, to Paskin for my wife what to do. But she does it. She puts out on her table, she puts out these various decorative pieces of plants that have been painted different colors, you know. So depending on what the tablecloth is or what dishes she's going to be using, she uses either rose-colored ones, or she uses natural wood-colored ones, or whatever. So what happened over here is that she had a table full of these things. They were covered with these little decorative plants. And she wanted to know whether could she actually select the ones that she wants for not to be on the table. And then would it be considered to be borer? Or because they're spread out like that, they're not considered to be mixed at all. And there's no din of borer where it isn't mixed. This story that Rav Dimi brought over here, the way Rav Bibi threw everything over the table, becomes the mucker of Rav Shloime Zalman's psak, that when things are just thrown out totally over the table and they're mixed, then bichlal there wouldn't be a problem of brira, and that would be the way he got away with the whole issue, in which case that's not called a mixture that you're borer from. So anyway, I could tell you what happened, is that he threw the whole thing out on the table, but I'm not sure why he threw the whole thing out on the table. Because since Rav Ami and Rav Asi had come, it could be he wanted to make a splash, and that was certainly a big splash, you know? So it might have just been done to make that splash. Or it might be because he held that even selecting ochel mitoch hapsolet would have been usur. Now, obviously, he could have done it right now on the table to give everybody what they asked for. The question, as Tosis explains, is why didn't he do it back in the kitchen? So, okay, I understand that that was not part of the Maisav Achila. That would have been done as Hachana, and he would have different desserts. Would you like apples? Would you like peaches? Would you like pears? And so on. But in this case, the reason that he didn't do it might be because he would have had to do it in the kitchen like that, or maybe it was just to make the splash. Omishum ayin yafalhu demechavit. Chizkiah says that if we're talking about borer and you're dealing with turmasin, and turmasin are those kind of special beans that they call lupine, that you have to cook up 7 times in order to make them in any way tasty. And the Druze like to do that. Barnea is getting ready to tell us about his neighbor that I can see, but we'll be mevater just today. And you go ahead and you're borer, the turmasin, from the psolet in the turmas, and you would be chayev. What? Why would you be chayev? You just described taking ocha mitoch psolet. And I thought we said in order to eat that. I mean, you didn't say if it's for now or for later. Mashma, even if it's for now, that you would be usser. No, it's different because shiny turmasin are unique. I'll tell you why. They're very different than anything else because you got to boil them up 7 different times. And if you don't boil them up after having first taken the boiling up and you don't, now there's 2 lishonos over here, shaklele or shalkele. These are 2 different girsaot. One of shaklele means if you don't take out the edible part from that thick shell around the bean, then it will spoil. And because of that, it's as if you're removing the psolet mitoch ha'ochel, because the way that it is now, it is going to spoil. So that the bean is also considered to be oichlin. So if you take out the beans, among the other beans, it's as if you took out waste, because right now, they are going to spoil. That's the girsa we have. Rashi's girsa is, and if you don't boil it, ilo shalkele, if you don't boil it. So after you cooked it a few times, if you don't boil it all the way, the 7 times, and you don't do it correctly, which means that each time that you do it, you pour it out, you take out the lower quality stuff that looks wormy or whatever. And then if you took out the good stuff just after 3 or 4 times, you are basically taking out waste. Why? Because the higher quality is going to need more cooking. And the higher quality is going to be ruined if you take it out early. The lower quality will not get ruined. So therefore, in this case, on the one hand, we could see the ochel that you want to be similar to psolet. And that's the point. The next malacha is tochein. Omer of Papa Haiman de Purim Silka. Somebody minces up beets. Is chayev mishum tochein. Now, this is a big machlokas rishonim, whether the word parim means to mince, which is the way that Rashi explains it over here, or the word parim means to smush. And that is much more similar to tochein. Furthermore, the question of what tochein is also very relevant. Let me ask you something. If you would squish a beet, is it the same as squishing a banana? Can you squish a banana? Is squishing a banana the equivalent of grinding a banana? And that's a big question for people who've got babies that are just starting to eat bananas on Shabbos, right? That's their baby food. So this gets into the question of whether the act of tchina is defined as separating things out into smaller pieces. You don't separate out pieces of the banana into smaller pieces when you smush the banana. So then it would dafka have to mean mincing, because mincing would be breaking it up into small pieces. Now that, of course, leads to the question, okay, how small is small? I mean, what about an Israeli salad? So I want to make an Israeli salad. Is that considered to be tahina because I'm cutting it up into such small pieces? Or does tahina only mean where it ceases to be clearly the veggie that it otherwise would have been because it's been separated into small parts? If I can't tell whether I'm looking at a kind of a piece of onion or a piece of cucumber, I can understand that would be a real minced salad. Okay, all of these issues are mamish nogei l'halacha. The question of bananas is a big machlokas between Reb Moshe Feinstein and the Chazon Ish. People are noyig to smush bananas because Reb Moshe Paskin, that it's not considered to be similar to chinah if you don't have a powdery or separated pieces that come out of it at the end. But as you can see, each one of these things is a world unto itself. Omer ben Ashna, Haiman de salit silti. If you're going to chop up little pieces of wood, then that's going to be tochein, because it's the equivalent to grinding, even if they're big enough to put into Richie's fire. Omer Rav Ashi, he copied a mishchata. Look, if you got to have it perfect, so that each piece of wood is a particular type of size that fits into your thing, then you're also going to be chayev mishum mechatech, because remember that the chituch of the skins, the idea was it's got to be 8.5 by 11, or an A4. But then that would give you a very specific size. Wherever your makban is a specific size, we get into yet another issue, which is chituch, besides the question of trina. And then we had halash v'ha'ofe. Now here, at last, we ask the fascinating question of why in the world are we calling the malachas by the names that we're giving them? Because there was no lisha in the Mishkan, and there was no afia in the Mishkan. The dinim of lisha and afia were for the aveda in the Mishkan, and the dinim of malachas Shabbos are things that were done in creating the Mishkan. So we seem to have gone out of our way to avoid the things that were done in the Mishkan. Boiling. Boiling was done. You had to do boiling in order to prepare many of the things that you were doing, whether they're dyestuffs or whether they're the types of sabamonim, herbs that you had. And the same thing is true. I mean, what's this jazz of lisha that we do? In what sense would we call it the same type of lisha? I understand mixing things together and now having them be all a mixture of that type of herb. But I mean, kneading seems to be a word that is used for baking. Therefore, says Rav Papa, this is very strange. The Tana has left the correct path, I would have thought. Shavak Tana didan bishul samamonim, which is what this is all about. And now he starts talking about baking, where there is no baking, and he should have said boiling, right? So for some reason, why? Tana didan, sidur de pat naki. Look, the Tana began with those things that were part of a Meda structure. They were part of a Meda structure that had to do with wheat and the processing of wheat, which gave us a connection to the structure of the malachas as they appear in terms of the human experience of Maisa Bereishis, rather than in precisely the way that they were done in the Mishkan. And this was considered by the Tana to be adif, because this is the thing that is universal to experience. And so he wanted to relate it to that. Once he started with that, he maintained it throughout all of the malachas that are listed in the Mishnah. And now when it comes to baking, Omer Avacha Bar Avavira, Aiman Neshadi Sikta L'Tanura. Let's say you've got a piece of wood that you want to harden into a peg, and you throw that piece of wood into your oven. You're chayev because you cooked the piece of wood. Well, why not? What do you mean, why not? Because you're not softening it, you're hardening it. I mean, isn't cooking in general doing something to soften the item? So you might have said, all he wants to do is make something hard. Kamashmalan, therefore, Rav Acha explains that you always do first make it soft, and then only afterwards, where you heat it to such an extent that all of the moisture is gone, like putting your piece of bread in the microwave and leaving it there a bit too long, only then does it turn hard. Now, this Gemara would certainly lead us to believe that the definition of cooking would be to soften. And the only reason you're chayev on the peg is because it did soften. The problem is that the Rambam, in his inimitable way, takes the Gemara and makes exactly the opposite conclusion. And he says that what the Gemara is saying is that the nature of cooking is to either harden something that was soft or to soften something that was hard, and to utilize heat for changing the consistency of something to meet your expectations. Now, everybody, therefore, has got to try to work on what the Rambam understands when he reads this Gemara. Okay, beautiful. In another case, I'll just finish up the afia over here in the bishul. Amar Rabba Barbahuna, if you cooked up tar, you would also be chayev because of mevashel. Well, obviously, why not? Pshita, because tar, you pour it out and it immediately turns hard. So you might have thought that you need to be doing a malacha that is permanent. That's usually the case. And therefore, since it only affects it temporarily while it's boiling out, so given the hader vikusha emalo, kamash malan, that the whole point over here is to get it soft long enough for me to do what I need to do with it, which is the same thing as the case of the peg that we had before. I softened it first, the way Rashi understands it. I softened it first, and then it becomes hard. So, my Rav, Haiman to Ovid Chavita, Chayev Mishum Sheva Chataot. So somebody who makes a barrel, remember, of course, a barrel in those days didn't look anything like what we're used to calling a barrel. We make it out of wood, and we make it out of slats, and so on. They made it out of earthenware. And so in order to make a barrel, what are the Sheva Chataot? Well, first of all, you've got to grind up the clay and get them very thin. So that would be the tochein. And we're not counting digging up, because remember, digging up could be mekalkel if you're on the tzorech la'afar, so we're not going to count that. And then you have to be borer, because you have to take out the thick pieces that were left inside. They're not going to mix well with the water. And then you have to put it through a sieve to get it even thinner. So that would be a mirakade. Then you would have to mix it with water, and that's lash, that's literally lash, and then you'd have to smooth it down afterwards, and that way you're doing exactly what you would have been doing on the skins where we had the mimareach, and there you'd be over on that also, so because that's mimachik. Then you'd have to light a fire in order to fire it up, because otherwise it's not very useful as earthenware. And then you'd have to put it in and basically harden it, which is a mevashel. So this way you've got yourself a seven. If you go ahead and you make a tanur, then you would be chayev shmona, because you'll remember that even though essentially all of the steps that you need to make an earthenware tanur, remember tanurim are all earthenware, ought to be the same as the chavit, and they really are. But there's one additional thing which you'll remember from the Mishnah in Kalim, and that additional piece which is necessary for a tanur is these putting on the insulation on the outside, that thick coating, which is considered to be an additional makeh bepatish as a step. Mashenkein, in the previous case, there was no finishing step. You just took it out of the tanur, and it was completed. So there was no makeh bepatish. So we have to add another one over here. Omra Baye, I got a better one for you. How about if you make a chalata? If you make a chalata, which is a sort of round, nice, large bowl that you make out of reeds, so it's one of those, very common, you pick them up all the time, and I don't know if they still have that store, Pier, what, 20 or something. But anyway, so the way that you would make that, remember that... What's it called?
Pier 1 Imports.
Ah, thank you, thank you. Pier 1 Imports, okay. So, I mean, you would know if they're still in business, wouldn't you, Mo?
No, they stopped writing, but that was by the frame store.
I see. Well, I still got the pictures we framed together there. It's only some 45 years by now, but we're doing okay. All right, so... Now, the way that you would make this, remember, is going to be an interesting insight, which we had already in Masechet Kelim, but an interesting insight into the elements of weaving that we weren't really thinking about before. Before we spoke about loom and threads, but the same essential idea would be true about reeds that you're going to be using here. And in this case, what you would need to do in order to make it is you would have to form, you would take those reeds. We'll talk about getting up to the point where here, but just the part about the ariga is fascinating. You would take the reeds, and so let's say you would take maybe 10 of these reeds, and you would make them into a star shape, crossing them over one or the other, and then flipping them around in the middle so that you tie them all together, and now they're all lied out like a star, which is connected in the middle. Now, the next thing that you need to do is to make certain that you hold that star in place. The way you hold it in place would be you would curl in and out, two interwoven pieces of reed through each one of them. And that makes a little border that holds down near the center of the star. It holds all of the pieces in shape. Now, that itself would be the equivalent of the two steps that you have in Ariga. Because when you made those first, you made the star, That was the equivalent of being Mesef. You were setting up the warp, right? Over here, you set it up like a star because you want to make a bowl. But it's exactly the same kind of thing that you'd be doing straight if you were weaving on a loom. And then when you put the loops around it, you were basically making heddles because you were keeping everything in shape. And now you're going to be able to put the shuttle. Of course, in this case, you put the shuttle, so to speak, a reed that you then start going round and round until you get to the outside, in and out, round and round, in and out, round and round, until you finally get to the top of the bowl that you're making, you see? So what you're doing over there is Ariga, plus you're doing the Mesach, plus you're doing the Osa Batenirim. So you're going to get all of that in there. So I want to show you what you can do. So first of all, you have to be Zomer, because you're basically taking off the reeds. When you do that, you're encouraging new growth, and you're also going to have the reeds as Ketsira. So you're going to be over both on the Ketsira and on the Noteya. Then when you've got them in a pile on the ground, you're going to have to gather them together. So that's Ma'amer. Then you're going to have to choose the ones that are usable, and that would be Borer. And after you Borer them, you're going to have to smooth them down. So that would be Mimachek, similar to the ore that you're Mimachek. And then you have to cut them into thinner pieces, and that would be the equivalent of tochein. Then you'd have to cut them to the correct size because they all have to end up at the same place. So then that would be mechateich. Then when you make the first warp, you'd be setting up the warp. So you would be over on mesech. And then when you would make the little piece around it, and you would actually put those things in it, you would actually be doing, if you start moving them up, one underneath, one on the bottom, that would be Osa Shtei Batenirim, which is those first curly things you would have to put around them. Then you'd have to actually move the shuttle in and out, the shuttle in this case being a reed, that would be Ariga. Then after the Ariga, you would have to cut the pieces that are sticking out on top and make it smooth, again, as we had in Masechet Kelim, and that would be the Makor B'Patish. So that gives you already 11. Now, if you want to make it really fancy and you want to sew a little rim around it, which is the way it's usually sold there in Pier 1 Moshe, so then that would give you an additional 2 melachas, because then you'd have to do tefira and you'd have to tie shira at the end of the tefira in order that the whole thing doesn't come apart. So you can really get up there just by making yourself 13 chataot, just for making yourself one basket weave bowl. Okay, now moving on into the clothing area over here. So in order to get your clothing in the first place, we talked about geziza. So if you're gozezet atzemer, umalabno. Now, those were the first two things. You shear the wool, and then you wash the wool. Omar Rabba Barbachana, Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Now, that's the way things are normally done, right? But suppose you're really a smarty pants kind of guy, and you need to make a mark in the world. So what you do is you wash the animal and you do the spinning while the wool is still on the back of the animal, so you comb it well, and then you cut it off so that you've got yourself spun wool. So then you're being toved tzemer, which is on the back of the animal on Shabbos. You'd be chayv 3 separate chataot. One of them would be the geziza, which you literally did only at the end. And this is, therefore, it's, everything is a little bit backwards. One would be for menapeitz, which is the disentangling of it, which is done by combing. But the truth is menapeitz, I'll show you a picture in which menapeitz is, on a primitive level, is done by hand without a comb even. As you could see, you're picking it apart by hand. in order to be able to get pieces that can be twisted into threads. So that's the first simplest stage of Minapetz. The way that many Rishonim learn Minapetz is they actually translate it as combing or carding. This would be carding. Okay, so that's a little bit more of a sophisticated understanding of Minapetz. But in any event, so if you did all of this on the back of the animal, so then you would be chayv three separate chataot, whereas Rav Kahana says you will not be chayv anything because you're a nut. I mean, ain't there a gezizah bekach? That's not the way that normal people do things, and that's not the way that normal people disentangle things, and it's not the way that you spin threads. So you're not chayv on anything, because remember that we have our klal. Anything that is done in a strange way is considered to be kelach yad, and therefore you're not chayv on. So forget that, says the Gemara. What? What are you talking about? That is the most premier way of getting yourself to do these malachas. Why, those women that brought the wool to the Beit to the Mishkan, that's precisely how they did it, because it says in the Torah, Tavu et ha'izim. What do you mean, Tavu et ha'izim? You don't spin goats, do you? They did, because what it means is that they spun the wool while it was on the goat. Exactly what we said. And that's what the Braita says. Tanya Mishmei, the Rebbe Nechemia, that they actually washed the hair of the goat, Shatuf B'izim, V'tavu B'izim. So you see that there is considered to be Tviya Agabe Behema, Shema Tviya. It's considered to be a type of Tviya. So why would you not be Chayim? Answers the Gemara, this is absolutely astounding, because remember that we're using the Mishkan as the source of the nature of Malacha, right? And yet the Gemara is coming out and saying that in the Mishkan, that was acceptable, but that's because the people in the Mishkan were super women. They weren't regular women. So it says that kol anashim asher nasan libana otana tavu et ha'izim. Those are like crazy kind of super aware people who have a completely different level of interrelationship with the material. But we cannot use that as the normal modality of doing the malacha. Now, note that what that means is that even if we learn the malacha from the Mishkan, it doesn't mean that the concept of the malachas machsheves that is possible for one person is necessary the definition of malachas machshevas for the other person. The nature of the malacha in terms of its achievement, which is the spinning of the threads and all the steps necessary to it, is indeed learned from the Mishkan. But in each case, it would be the just like we understand that whatever the norm would be in a particular case at a particular time and so on, that would be considered to be the normal way of doing the malacha. The same thing is true as the state of awareness and connection to the material that is possible in a particular situation might be different in one society or one situation from another. So we need to distinguish between the way in which one goes about doing the malacha and what it is that the malacha is. And therefore, and that's what we had before, actually. We had cases where in such a case, in such a place where things are done in this way, then this is considered to be the normal way to be carrying something, let's say. Where in another place it would not be. So again, the malacha is universal, but its modality or your connection to it in terms of the machshavas is not necessarily universal. So chachma yetera shayne, people that are really just super women, those are different. Tana Rabbana. So we started the sugya off with the tar, and now we get to the feathers that Barnea was so worried about. And therefore we have Tana Rabbana. Somebody who plucks a feather, atolesh et kanaf, and then he clips the feather because he wants to have the thin parts of the feathers. You take the little tip of the feather, which is soft, that you want to use for your down. Well, it's not really down, but it's similar to down. You want to use it for stuffing your pillow, let's say, or making a jacket with. And then your morto. Now, morto, we get into a problem. The shaft is obviously not usable for stuffing, right? Because that's, I mean, that's just going to prick your skin. You don't want that. But you would like to get the soft hairs that are attached to the bottom of the shaft, which are really similar to the down. So if you would use that hair for your pillow, then that would be very nice. That's how Rashi understands it. However, there's a big problem with that. Because what it says over here, that if you do that and you're morto, you pull off the hair, and Rashi's learning that it's from the shaft, that you're chayev shalosh chata'ot. And Reish Lakish explained, what are the three chata'ot? Let me explain it to you. On the one of the original tolesh, if you pluck it, that you're be mechayev on, because that's geziza. The equivalent to shearing a sheep on a bird would be plucking a feather. If you're kotim, when you clip off the small top of the feather, so then you're chayev mishum mechatech. Then what you're doing is you're cutting, and you're cutting to a specific area, and that's the same as the mechatech that we had as one of the melachos ha'or. Please mute yourself, whoever is in a state of cold. And then we have the last one, and here's where we run into problem with Rashi. The mimareit yerchayev mishum mimachek. Now remember that mimachek was the malacha of smoothing down the ore. But over here, it's not that you're smoothing down the feather, because you're going to be throwing out the feather. So we can't possibly talk. This is Tosus's Taina. How in the world could you use this as a mimachek if you don't even want that piece? You're just going to be throwing it out. And therefore, it's nowhere near similar to that. And because of that, what you need here is the things that you're pulling off, not the skin that you're leaving behind. So that's the opposite of the mimareach. Because of that, many of the other Rishonim say we're not talking about that at all. We're talking about needing to use dafka, the shaft, not to use the soft feathers. And in order to use the shaft for whatever it was that they made out of it, he talks about hats, apparently they used it for making hats, and then you need to have a smooth shaft. So then it makes sense to calling it mimareya. Okay, next thing that we had was kosher umatir. Where in the world was anybody tying anything in the Mishkan? Omar Rava, well, what do you mean? When you put up the Mishkan, you had to tie the yiriot of the Mishkan onto the yitedot of the Oalim, right? So you had strings, and you had these yitedot that we speak about in the Torah, and you tie the yiriot, so there you have Kishira. And when it was time to leave, you had to be matir. So isn't that perfect? Says the Gemara, no, that's not perfect at all. Because in order to be chayef for Kishira, as we're going to see later, the nature of Kishira has to be permanent. It's not that you're making a knot in order to untie it immediately, which might be the case. And that would be a hu kosher manat lahatir hu. So how would that be mechayev you a chatat if it's not really considered to be a kesher shel kayama? And we're going to talk about that later on, beferish in the Mishnah, that kesher sheino shel kayama is considered to be not chayev. It's potter. Elo omer abaye, I'll tell you what the pshat is. Suppose you were working on the ariga. Now, for the ariga, you had a very, very complicated ariga. Remember that the type of threads that you were using over there were made out of six different materials, and they had to be twisted together. I mean, it's a really a big job. And it was not all that simple to have one long thread that would be 20 kilometers long. So if you ran out of thread, and nifzikalahem nima, so you would have to tie another thread carefully to that thread to be able to continue the weave, right? Wherever one of the threads broke. So koshrimota, you would tie it together. Amarle Rava, well, that's all very nice. I mean, yes, that would certainly be a place where Kshira was essential for doing the Malacha of the Mishkan, but you haven't explained why I would be Matir. Matir Ma'ikala Mema, where would be Matir? V'chi Tema, I know what you're going to tell me. You're going to tell me that if you did a poor job of planning it and you ended up with tying a long thread and then noting that when you came out with the weave, oh my God, two of these knots came out right next to each other. Now you had no way of knowing it was going to end up like that, but two knots end up next to each other. Okay. So now what are you going to do? You're going to untie one of those knots because, I mean, you can't possibly have a lump in the fabric with two knots of that size thread. So what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to untie one of those knots and then have them next to each other and let it be a little bit loose and hope for the best, right? I mean, what else can you do? So that's what you're trying to tell me? If you got two knots next to each other, then you would have to untie one and leave the other one. That's how Rashi understands it. Others learn not leave the other one hanging, but incorporate it in the knot of the first one. So you make one knot with the two threads. And you would shod echad v'kotir echad, which is lav dafka, according to Rashi. I mean, come on, man. I dare you to make the emperor's new robe like that. You get your head handed to you. So, you wouldn't dare make some, you'd start over. So, that's the way that you make the Riyot of the Mishkan. Should be embarrassed at even making a suggestion like that. So, that cannot be the case. I'll tell you what the case is. The case is like this. There you are in the Midbar, and you realize you need tcheles. So obviously you have to go fishing right there in the desert. And in order to go fishing, you don't just go fishing, you're going to go diving, because you got to get your chilazon. You might have a hard time doing this in the desert, so it might take a little bit of a journey. There's a lot of discussion about how in the world you get the chilazon in the Midbar. But however you do, in order to be able to trap these chilazons, you know, so you got yourself up to the coast over there, the Mediterranean somehow, and in order to make the nets, you're going... No, that it says Beferish, Jeff, that those skins... were enochinami. They were miraculous. They were made, they were mizdamein to Moshe Rabbeinu lefishah. There are those who suggest that included in all those briyos that were presented to Moshe lefishah, that it was included a special briya that was similar to the chilazon in the Midbar. But in any event, you had to trap. So in order to trap it, what we would do is make nets. Now, those nets made permanent knots, of course. But there were times when you'd want to extend a net, so then you would have to open up the ends of the net, untie them, and now add additional new tied net pieces to it. So you had both. You had Sadei Chilazon, or both Koshrim and Matirim, and therefore you would both do both of them. The next case that we had in the Mishnah was Atofer Shtei Tfirot. If you sew one stitch, which is putting a needle in and out, a tfira means putting a needle through. So even though it seems to be saying you need to sew two stitches, it's not true. Ask the Gemara, but wait a minute. Just having one stitch is not going to hold. The thread's going to fall out. V'holo kaima. Omar Rabba Barbachon, Omar Rabbi Yochum. Well, obviously, you would have to be doing that through kshira of the thread on either side to prevent it from going through the hole, like you do when you put it through a buttonhole. And the next thing we had, sorry?
New recording.
Soon. And then HaKorea Almanat Litfor. Where in the world did we do Kriya in the Mishkan exactly? Rabba Rabbi Zera the Amr Tavayo, I'll tell you where we did Kriya. Because if you had a Uriah And a darna is a worm that bores through material. So it's a larvae of some kind. And then you would need to do, and this must be the source of the word, darning for the darna, right? That darna went right through the hole and I got to darn it all up. So there you've got your uses of darna. It's not technically true, though, because darna is really invisible weaving, where you use the threads that are kayam, and it's not tefira. But anyway, it's cute. So if you've got a hole, okay, what are you going to do? The only way that you could possibly fix that is you can't let it bunch up and pull the material together where the hole was. So you've got to be able to actually cut through it by tearing it from top to bottom and then sewing on another piece. That's the point. So korinba vitofrimotam.